Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There is nothing unusual about a con. People think, oh, you're conning someone else to get something. You're conning someone else to make yourself feel better, or to get laid, or to make money, or to avoid prison, or whatever. The thing is, we don't just con other people. We con ourselves all the time. We trick ourselves. We misdirect ourselves to avoid responsibility, or stay in bad relationships, or stay in certain jobs, or feel better about ourselves or about our self-image, or to justify things we know we did that were wrong. Conning is a natural part of human nature. And therefore, the way to pull off the best con is to acknowledge the key ingredient is human nature. And it's the human nature of the people pulling off the con and the human nature of the people who are the victims of the con. But in both situations, those two individuals are also conning themselves at the same time.
That's Lee Goldberg. And if you're scratching your head asking yourself, where have I heard that name before? It might be because he's a New York Times best-selling author. Maybe it's from one of the other books he's written, including one he co-wrote with his friend Janet Ivanovich. He wrote the Eve Ronan series, the Ian Ludlow series, and a slew of books that were based on the television shows Diagnosis Murder and Monk. You've probably watched television shows he's been involved with, shows like Monk, Psych, Nero Wolfe, Diagnosis Murder, Hunter, and Baywatch among them. My bet is that you're not scratching your head anymore, and that you realize you know Lee Goldberg very well. And after you hear this discussion, you'll know even more. I'm Jim Grinstead, and today you're going to hear Lee Goldberg talk about how he writes scams and cons into his work. Because, hey, someone has to make this stuff up. First, you need to know this is not a paid show. I make no money on it. I don't get a role in a TV show. Not even a free lunch. Nevertheless, I'm going to plug his latest book, at least the latest at this writing, Malibu Burning. It's a good read. In fact, I was in the middle of The Stand, arguably Stephen King's best book, but put it down to read Malibu Burning. Don't worry, Stephen, I came right back to you. So let's jump right into it. How does Lee come up with the scams for his stories?
And I usually start with a character. I usually start with a conflict and build the story out from there. I don't usually start with the crime. Though in the case of Malibu Burning, I had this notion for a crime and a con and did build the story out from there. But most of the time, I start with a character that interests me. And then what story, what crime, what mystery, what situation will allow me to explore that character in a way that will entertain me and hopefully a few readers. So I come up with a thriller or a mystery or a police procedural that will help me explore that character and that my character will have a stake in. It won't just be a case. It'll be a case that impacts them on some level personally or emotionally or psychologically. I mean, that's the key to making a book work. The case has to work the character as much as the character works the case. I like to give each character an Achilles heel. I have a very successful series of police procedurals, the Eve Ronan series. In fact, the new book comes out in 2 weeks, Dreamtown. And in that series, Eve Ronan is the youngest female detective in the homicide division in the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department in the history of the department. And it's a job she did not deserve, and she knows she doesn't deserve, and has to prove herself every single day, not just to the world around her, and to the media, but to herself.
Character is important, but there has to be a plot, a pathway the characters must follow, a goal to be reached.
When I plot a story, I know exactly where I'm going. I know what the clues are. I know who done it. A mentor of mine, Stephen J. Cannell, who created the Rockford Files and the A-Team and a bunch of other shows, said to me, it's one thing to get in a car and drive. It's another thing to get in a car and say, I'm going to go from Los Angeles to New York, and I think I'm going to take the Interstate 10 all the way there. That doesn't mean you're going to do it, but at least you know where you're going. Doesn't mean you can't have side trips along the way, but you know what you're headed to. So I always know where I'm heading. When I craft a con, at first what I do is I come up with the con I want to do, and I want to make sure the publisher says yes before I go into the hard work of creating the con. I say, here's what the con is, and here's what it will accomplish. I don't say how I will pull it off. In my view, a con has to be simple for the viewer or reader to understand and outrageously complicated to pull off. So all kinds of things can go wrong, and the protagonist has to make changes on the fly. And in the perfect con, in my view, cons the reader or the viewer as well, has an unexpected twist that the reader or viewer didn't see coming, that in rewatching the show or rereading the book, they will see, oh, it was there all the time. And it's misdirection. And it's the same thing in a con. While you're misdirecting and fooling the mark, hopefully you're doing the same thing to the reader or the viewer without excluding anything from them, without hiding stuff from them. And that's very difficult to pull off, but really satisfying when it works. I mean, right now I'm in the midst of trying to come up with a con for my new book, and I know what the con has to achieve, but I haven't quite figured out all the steps to get there. And I haven't figured out quite yet, the way to con my reader. But I will.
So how does all this work together on Malibu Burning? There are multiple characters and different motivations.
Well, Malibu Burning is both a police procedural and a big, high-concept heist con novel merged together. I wanted to take the traditional police procedural and expand it into more of a summer blockbuster movie sort of story. So it's a dual timeline story. It's about the biggest wildfire in California history and the two arson investigators who are looking into it and who begin to realize there's more to the fire than it seems. In the other track, we go back 8 years to a con man whose con falls apart, and he goes to prison and ends up part of the convict firefighting crew and picks up firefighting skills and ends up using those skills 8 years later to exact revenge on someone who wronged him and his friends. And at a certain point in the book, the two timelines collide and don't go in the way that readers will expect. It was a challenge for me to manage those two timelines, but Malibu Burning commercially and critically has been one of the biggest successes of my career. So it worked out well.
Yeah, but the big publishing companies and TV networks won't take my calls. I understand that books spring from your imagination, then you pitch that idea to a publisher. But does it work differently for TV?
Television is a whole different thing. I will go in to pitch something I know the network is looking for. They say, oh, we're looking for police procedurals, or we're looking for medical mysteries, or we're looking for whatever. And I pitch my take on that. And I have to come up with a concept that I know will last for 100 episodes. It'll have enough conflict in it to generate 100 stories. And that I can tell stories in 44 minutes about 60 pages per story. So yeah, I go in with a whole different set of expectations and requirements when I'm pitching a TV thing. Also, I'm pitching something I know has to be shot in a certain number of days at a certain budget, and that all impacts what I come up with for television. But right now, the majority of my time is spent writing books and optioning my books to Hollywood for other people to deal with those problems.
So give me an example.
People often made the mistake of pitching the show these impossible, and it's always an impossible crime. That's the other thing, an impossible situation. And too many writers thought first of the impossible situation and not of the character. So I remember the first time I pitched to Monk, to the showrunner of Monk. And actually, he had me come to a dinner. He was going on a date. He just wanted to blow me off and go to the movie. I was pitched to him by the studio. He didn't really want to work with me. So I purposely pitched the story badly to start with. And I'm going to pitch it the same way now to you. There's this guy from San Francisco who goes to Mexico on vacation and he does skydiving. And he goes to pull the ripcord and it comes out in his hand. And he goes to pull up the emergency ripcord. It comes out in his hand. He hits the ground, splat, he's dead. But it turns out it's not the fall that killed him. His lungs are full of salt water. He somehow drowned in midair. And the showrunner of Monk, Andy Breckman, yawned. And I said, oh, I forgot to mention this guy from San Francisco who jumped out of the airplane. He's the mayor of San Francisco's godson. And he goes, okay. And because the mayor of San Francisco feels so bad about this, he promises to put the best detective in San Francisco on the case, Adrian Monk. He sends a man who's afraid to step out his front door to Mexico to solve this case. So Monk brings all the food and water and linens and dishes and toiletries he will need for 6 months when he goes down to Mexico. And it's all stolen at the border. So Monk refuses to eat, drink, or sleep the whole time he's there. And Andy goes, sold. I said, don't you want to know how the impossible murder happened? I don't care. That's a great Monk story. So the key is to tell a story that can only be told on your show or with your characters. It has to come from character. It has to come from conflict.
Okay, let's slip back to the writing process. You start with character, work out a plot. It would seem the next step is research. Are your ideas for a scam or even the plot itself believable? Are they even doable?
All the books I wrote with Janet Ivanovich, the Fox O'Hare series, all involve a major con and a major heist. And I steal an element from Mission Impossible. Well, not really from Mission Impossible, more like the original Man from U.N.C.L.E., where I will bring a civilian with special skills into the con as well, who has to help out. And that was the initial concept of Man from U.N.C.L.E. A civilian was brought into the spy situation, usually involving a con, and they dropped that. And some of the early episodes of Mission Impossible, they would recruit somebody from outside the intelligence service, you know, a card sharp or a magician or a scientist to help them achieve their con. But what I don't do in my cons is the elaborate stuff of, you know, pulling off a fake face and using outrageously sophisticated technology. I believe in simple human nature is the best weapon to use and simple distraction. When I am running a show and I have a writer's room, what I always tell my writers is nobody cares about the plot. Nobody. What they remember are the characters. And I'll give you a good example. There's a classic episode of Rockford. And I don't even remember what the story was. Rockford comes back from a trip to Hawaii, and there are three thugs in turtlenecks waiting for him at the airport. And they say, stay away from the Thurston affair. He went, what's the Thurston affair? And, they beat the shit out of him. He has no idea what they're talking about. He goes back to his motorhome, and there are three thugs waiting for him. We want you, he said, I know, to stay out of the Thurston affair. I don't even know what it is, but I promise you I'll have nothing to do with it. Well, that's not good enough. They beat the shit out of him again. Wakes up the next morning, more thugs outside his door. He says, I know, stay out of the Thurston case. I believe me, if I ever run across anyone, in fact, I will beat myself up now to save you the trouble. They beat him up anyway. Rockford then goes to his mechanic, who's been taking care of his car while he was out of town, and discovers the mechanic has been going around Los Angeles as Jim Rockford, taking on cases and took on the Thurston affair and got Rockford into this horrible situation. When I interview people, and I do an enormous amount of research for my books, if you look at the back of Malibu Burning, I think there's four solid pages of me acknowledging all the people and resources I went to learn about arson investigation and the convict firefighting service and all that stuff. I'm looking for authenticity. I'm looking for character. I'm looking for a point of view. I'm looking for voice. When I decided to do this book, Malibu Burning, I knew nothing about arson investigation. I knew what I wanted to accomplish with my arson investigation. I knew some of the clues, but I really didn't know anything about the mindset of an arson investigator. I didn't know how they looked at the world. I didn't know some of the special techniques available to them. So I sought out an expert in arson investigation, and I just talked to him. He told me about some of his cases. He talked to me about his philosophy of the law, about politics, and I just listened to the way he thought about, and the way he looked at a crime scene and the way he looked at an incendiary device and tried to understand how the incendiary device reflected the character of the person who made it. It was fascinating. And when I wrote the book, there was no dialogue in the book from him, but his wife read it and said, God, it sounds like you. I mean, I had a great experience years ago. I was at one of these training conferences and there was an FBI profiler there. And he said, most detectives are not going to run into serial killers. A lot of you in this room probably have never had the opportunity to interact with a serial killer. So I've arranged for us to speak with 6 convicted serial killers. Let me tell you about their case histories and about how they'll try to con you. How they'll try to appear mild and innocent or really scary, or you know, how they will try to play you, because all these serial killers are essentially con men. It was fascinating. So he prepared us for interacting with these serial killers. And then we had the 2.5-3 hours of interaction with this room full of serial killers. And then afterward, we had the post-game examination of what we experienced and how we were manipulated and what they were trying to accomplish. And it was fascinating. They love to talk about themselves. They love it. And if you don't attack them, if you're not judgmental, if you're just saying, that crime you took off was, that crime you did was pretty goddamn ballsy. You're not telling them you're a crook or a sociopath or, you know, even when you're talking with the serial killers who will admit to what they did, they say, God, it's really amazing how you worked your way into that house and you got her to open the door for you. And then they'll tell you, you know, if you're not there saying you're a horrible monster and what you did was wrong, you try to go in there as a friend, as someone who's like enjoying it with them or sympathizing with them. I'm not there to destroy you. I'm not there to demonize you. And I'm not here to psychoanalyze you. I'm telling a fun story, you know, and I want to see it the way you saw it.
The characters in your books have clear goals, but have to struggle to reach them. I remember one writer telling me to not fall in love with my protagonist. My job as a writer is to get them in trouble, then get them in worse trouble. TV seems different.
If you look at Diagnosis Murder with Dick Van Dyke and Matlock with Andy Griffith and the Father Dowling Mysteries with Tom Boswell, the guy who starred in Happy Days, they all had the same structure. An elderly, older detective with 2 assistants, one an amateur and one a professional, and they would solve crimes. And they would regenerate stories between those series. And before I was on Diagnosis Murder, there were a couple episodes that were Matlock episodes that just changed the names, you know. And what I did with my partner, William Rabkin, when we came on that show was we made sure every story came out of character, came out of the relationship between a Dick Van Dyke's doctor and his son who's a cop, and always had a medical element in it that would not be in any other show. And was always driven by that conflict between father and son, but also the medical world view that Dr. Sloan had. He saw everything as a medical situation, even when it wasn't, and it made it special, and it differentiated from the other shows of the same format.
So Janet Ivanovich, there's a huge difference between her Stephanie Plum and the characters you create. How did you two work together? Did your styles clash?
The way we worked is I would tell her my idea for a plot, because she doesn't do cons. And also, I insisted that we don't try to write Stephanie Plum novels. We had to create a new voice that was neither Janet nor me. So I said, if I could write like you, Janet, I would be you, and I'd have your success. And I don't want to try to imitate you. So I would come up with a story, run it past her. She'd give me her ideas. I'd write up a pitch. She'd run the pitch past the publisher. The publisher liked it. Then I'd flesh out a pretty detailed outline, which I would send to Janet, and she'd give me her thoughts on the outline. And then I would start writing the book in 25,000-word chunks. We had a contract that each book had to be 100,000 words. And I would send her 25,000 words, and she'd give me her notes on the 25,000 words and send it back to me. And I would incorporate those notes and go forward. And then I'd send her my next 25,000-word chunk, and my next, until I had 100,000 words. And then she'd do her magic Janet pass. And I don't say that facetiously. It is a magic Janet pass. I mean, she's one of the biggest selling authors on the planet. She did a remarkable job, did what I would call in television a showrunner pass. She ran it through, you know, her computer. She tweaked some dialogue. She moved things around. It was a wonderful experience. We did 5 books that way.
I had a great conversation with Lee, but before we rang off, I had to ask a question. How does a man jump out of an airplane and drown in midair?
I don't want to give it away. It's a great episode of Monk. It's called Mr. Monk Goes to Mexico. I'm not going to reveal it.
If you want to read Malibu Burning, and I know you'll enjoy it, there will be a link in the show notes. There will also be a link to Lee's website and a list of his works. By the time you hear this, a new Lee Goldberg book will be out. It's called Dreamtown, and I'll put a link to that as well. Our next episode marks the start of Season 6. It's a fun departure in that we focus most of the season on the longest con of all, vanishing. It walks you through what non-criminals must do to disappear, to give up one life and create a new one. It's a different kind of con because instead of a con artist trying to fool you, you'll be trying to fool everyone in the world. If you pull it off, it will be one of the longest cons of all, and only you can run it. You can't ask for a better character than that. If you enjoy Scams and Cons, please give us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. It helps people find us, and your ratings really make a difference. And don't forget to head over to our Facebook group, where I'll post more stories about scams, and you can chat with other fans. Just search Facebook for Scams and Cons, and be sure to select the group rather than the page. It's a private group to keep the bots out, so just ask to join and I'll take care of the rest. I look forward to hearing what you have to say. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Amy and Vanessa from She Goes by Jane, where we shine light on the stories of missing and unidentified women. On November 7th, we're sharing Nahida's story for the first time in a podcast. And this is a story that I thought I knew, but after reading police reports, became more complicated than I thought. When investigators are called to Nahida Khatib's house, everything looks fine. Her purse is on the kitchen table, her cup of coffee is on the counter, and her 2-year-old niece is in her playpen. The only thing amiss? Nahida is missing.
Every week we feature a poem written in honor of the person we're talking about. This week, we're joined by one of our favorite actresses. You might know her from Sister Act or King of the Hill or The Descendants. But if you're like us, you'll know her from Hocus Pocus. She's the much beloved Kathy Najimy. Join us November 7th to hear Nahida's story.